Blog Talk Radio.
At Syndicated News, we talk about everything and anything. This is the only radio show where you can promote your event, your business, product, or service by telling us all about it while the entire world listens to every little detail. Tell our listeners about what you're offering. Tell them where they can get it and how much it's going to cost them. Do you have an event? We want the details. We want to know about your business, product, or service, and you're going to tell us all about it. The old adage still applies. You can't sell it if you can't tell it. I'm your host.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Syndicated News.
Hello.
So who's here? Identify yourselves one at a time. Let's start with 703-0923.
Hi, it's Jeff Greenberger.
Welcome to Syndicated News. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And 4487, give us your name.
This is R.K. Klebenstein. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Good evening, R.K. I'm sure everything's great with you. It always is.
It always is.
And 2826, identify yourself.
It's Linnea Appleby's mom and dad.
Oh, good afternoon.
Hello.
Good evening. Welcome to Syndicated News.
Thanks.
So who's going to start?
I thought Linnea would be starting.
Yes, is Linnea here? Ah, I see her there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see who this is. Good evening, 8118. Hello?
I don't know who that is.
Well, there are only five people that were invited to this show, and three of us should be here, and another one shows up at 9:30. So we've got some wonderful details and topics provided by Linnea, actually, and let's start with one of her number one topics for me. Let's see that. The last couple of years, they are saying that self-storage has caught the attention of individual investors. Can somebody explain that? Who wants to take a shot at that?
I'll be happy to address that. This
Please
is
do. Yes. Yes.
Gotcha. You know, it's interesting because that's how the business really began many years ago, was that individual owners and operators birthed this business back in the early 1970s. And then it matured and received the attention of Wall Street, who embraced the product and really poured a lot of capital into the ability to grow the industry. And it's come full circle with investors today, one-off individual investors still looking at the dynamics of the self-storage business and wondering how they can get in the business and how they can take advantage of the great returns that are available for really well-conceived projects. And so it's interesting how it really is as attractive today to small investors as it was in its infancy, but it was really birthed and grown by the institutions who provided the capital to get us where we are today.
Who else wants to offer a few words on that matter, on that topic?
Well, this is Jeff Greenberger and R.K. I think
yes, please do.
Probably 90% of facilities are still owned by what we consider to be mom-and-pop type organizations. One, two, three facilities, sometimes five, but not your typical institutional investor, unlike the apartment industry or the shopping center industry, which is those have been gobbled up by institutional investors like the insurance companies and the REITs. Self-storage still remains a business that you as an individual can own and operate, or hire a fee manager and still afford to pay that fee manager. And like anything else in real estate, with the right location, you can make really good money doing it. And actually, there was a statistic I read about 3 or 4 weeks ago that the self-storage loan portfolio has the lowest mortgage default rate of any commercial mortgage in the industry, in the whole spectrum. So it is a successful business. It's still going well. I did a long interview with a reporter from the New York Times who had a theory that the foreclosure crisis was the greatest boon ever to self-storage because everyone will be moving out of their homes and need a place to put their stuff. I haven't found that to be true, but the industry is not recession-proof, but it's doing really well in this otherwise kind of dismal economy.
Jeff brings up a really great point that the Self-Storage Association's estimates that there's some maybe 56,000 self-storage properties across the United States, and statistically about 12% of them are owned by quote-unquote institutional money. And so you're right, Jeff. It is a big industry for the small investor and still has tremendous opportunities within it.
Hi, this is Linnea. I just joined.
Linnea, welcome to Syndicated News.
I'm sorry. I apologize if I was a few minutes late.
That's okay.
But I wanted to jump in on this.
That's perfectly okay.
Because I
maybe you want to take a shot at question number two. Self-storage facilities. They seem to be popping up on every street corner. Is there still rule, Linnea?
Pardon me? I'm sorry. Are they still what? I've lost.
I think she wanted to know if there was still room for more.
Oh, is there still room for more? In certain areas, absolutely. And, you know, and any self-storage investor needs to do their homework very, very seriously and not get emotionally involved in the process, making sure that they look at it as an investment that it is. And kind of back to the first question, I always think that, you know, self-storage is really like one of the last opportunities that individual investors have to own and operate a business pretty much the way they want. It used to be in the olden days you could run a liquor store or a hardware store or a clothing boutique or any number, a restaurant, for example, and with the larger operations coming in on those kind of businesses, it's really put a hamper on the small person getting into those types of businesses, and self-storage is an ideal opportunity for people who still want to be entrepreneurial in their own way. So as far as self-storage facilities on every corner, yes, they do seem to be popping up everywhere. And is there still room? It just depends on where and the location and the amount of people that are in that area. RK has way more information on that than I. RK?
You know, thanks, Linnea. And, you know, Linnea knows better than a lot of us about the inference from big companies, because she mentioned the restaurant business. And Linnea, didn't you work for one of the big restaurant companies at one time?
I worked for a big restaurant company, and I also worked for a large, as did you, RK, a large self-storage REIT. So kind of been in both both corporate worlds for both restaurants and self-storage, and it's certainly a little bit better being an entrepreneur.
You know, one of the things, Linnea, that brought to mind when you said about are they still, you know, room for more self-storage properties, and you said to be cautious and careful about it, I couldn't agree more. And with the tremendous amount of competition that is out into the marketplace today, you know, we're encouraging clients every day not to take what I call compromise sites. A couple of years ago when the market was so robust and you couldn't really get the right site because you were competing with big box retailers for a good self-storage site to get on every major corner, a lot of developers were taking secondary sites 150, 200 feet off the main road. They were just taking any kind of a compromise they could get into the business. And we're seeing now that a slight slowdown in our industry in some cases from occupancies dropping slightly or rental increases not as robust as they used to be. And so, you know, I think one of the messages that a lot of folks are sending is don't take a compromise site today. Go for the A site. Don't go for a B or a C site. And the banks are beginning, I think, to follow suit as well, really scrutinizing very heavily those B and C sites and wondering about the viability of those sites long term, because they're beginning to see folks who took a site in an industrial park that was entirely acceptable as a site 15 or 25 years ago, but today that's not the site. It needs to be in mainstream retail commercial traffic. And so, you know, one word of wisdom and caution is don't go for a compromised site. You know, go for the very best site possible.
Additionally, this comes right on the heels. Our economy comes right on the heels of a very robust economy where self-storage was being snapped up as quick as you could build it, similar to the housing market, and where there were actually investors who were purchasing self-storage facilities that had not yet been built and paying a premium for them as if they were 90% occupied or fully absorbed and the cash stream was already there, and it wasn't. So those folks are now in a bit of hardship because with the economy the way it is, it's taking longer and it's a slower process for them to get the return that they felt was there. And same as people flipping houses, you really have to know what you're getting into and how the climate and environment are going to support you long term.
Let's take a crack at another question. Should a newcomer buy a facility that's open or operating, or develop a new one?
Well, I think a newcomer should look at the investment opportunities, evaluate both a new facility in development and also looking to acquire a facility, and determine what's the best for them. Some people want to take a lower risk and buy something that someone else has put the money into and developed and filled up, and they're buying the cash flow, and they're buying the business to operate as well as the real estate piece. However, for the investor that's maybe a little more savvy or has a little more time to wait for the return on their dollar, a development position offers a greater return over the long haul. But again, it goes back to the investor and what their criteria is, what their model is for their own portfolio and investment strategies, and also what their exit strategy is and how long are they going to be in this this piece of investment.
Linnea, it's also a matter of capital, because the amount of equity that's required to build a new store is significantly greater, sometimes double at least what it is to buy an existing property. And so from a financing perspective, how you are capitalized may dictate your ability to get into a property as to whether you buy an existing property or you develop a property. And quite frankly, that may leave a very special niche, which are properties that could be expanded, small properties that are yet still affordable and haven't realized their full potential yet, but have certainly proven that their location is meritorious of the development. And possibly those are the ones that could be expanded, so you are able to blend the high price and low return of buying an existing property and yet accelerate your returns by taking a little bit of risk and adding on to that property and increasing the overall scope and size of the property, and then really getting the benefit of the upside from the development side.
Very true.
I'd like to hear from someone that's interested in finance and can give us a perspective from the financial number. The current economy, how is it affecting self-storage?
I think it's
who wants to take that?
I think it's affecting
is
it a number
Steve Merton
of...
on the call? Is Steve Merton on the call?
I don't think so.
Steve, are you here?
I guess not. Okay, yeah.
Okay, because I think I have Lynae's parents. They announced themselves. Are they here?
Pardon me?
Well, someone's parents. I thought they were Lynae's parents, they said.
We're here.
Well, what happened was you took his spot. I wasn't expecting you.
Okay, well, suppose we hang up and Steve calls in.
Oh, you're so kind, because this is one of the few times that I've had an overflow of guests, and there's more than our switchboard can handle, actually. But thank you. We're flattered. We're flattered.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay.
Thank you.
I didn't know.
So we can give him an opportunity to join in.
Okay.
So someone else take that question, since he's not here yet.
You were talking about the financing?
Yes. How's it affecting the economy? How's it affecting this business?
I can tell you how it's affecting the business from an operating standpoint, but from a finance standpoint, that would be an RK question. RK, do you want to answer that on the finance?
Sure. You know, I think that what you were asking is the current economy and how it affects the self-storage business.
Yes.
Certainly, lenders have tightened up, and their underwriting requirements are more stringent than they were a year or so ago. They're protecting themselves with what we call MAC clauses, which are material adverse conditions, which basically in a conduit or securitized loan, one that is being sold in a secondary market, those loans are not really loans until they're actually closed, because the lenders have this ability to walk away from the transaction based on these material adverse condition clauses. So if interest rates would go up significantly, even though they've written an original loan commitment that might have said that the rate was going to be 6.5%. If those rates shift significantly, they're able to say, look, rates are 7.5%. We don't have to fund this loan because it's an adverse condition and we're protected by our loan documentation. That documentation has been in place for years and years but has not had the necessity to be exercised. It was really birthed out of the last major credit crunch that we went through.
Yes, we have a new caller. Identify yourselves, please.
Hello, is this Ruthie?
Yes.
This is Steve Merton. How are you?
I'm so glad you're here. We're right in the middle of it, and we'd love to have you join in a few minutes. Stay right with us.
I'm here. Hey, Dave.
Okay, continue.
So I think that, you know, that is one of the things that we have seen is lenders have begun to exercise some of the trips and the abilities to cast a loan and to make sure that they're protected when they make that loan so that they can sell it in the secondary market. And that's affected the self-storage borrower because they're faced with stronger underwriting criteria today. And Steve will probably be able to tell us about debt service coverage ratios,
sure,
loan-to-value ratios, and really fill us in on that. You know, one of the things that Jeff said was real interesting was he was interviewed by the New York Times, and maybe you could share a little bit
Correct.
More of that later on. But one of the things that we are absolutely seeing is that there are two philosophies about how the economy has affected self-storage as a whole. One of them is what that reporter might have been thinking about, which is that this foreclosure tsunami that may be coming is going to create a downsizing need in households, and that storage customers will use self-storage because they're going from a 2,500-square-foot house down to a 1,500-square-foot house and actually picking up some disposable income because their housing commitment dollar is less each month. And so that does create an opportunity for self-storage. But just a few, about 6 weeks ago, Dean Jernigan, who is the head of U-Storit, one of the REITs, he came out on record and said, you know, we're seeing higher what we call lien sales, which are unpaid rents, and the self-storage operator has an opportunity to sell what is in storage if he's followed the letter of the law, so to speak, and Jeff could certainly address
We're talking
that.
About abandoned storage, correct?
Not necessarily abandoned, but they haven't paid their rent. They just didn't pay
their
rent.
They haven't met the bill, right.
Correct, and what Dean said is he said, gosh, self-storage is like fourth on the food chain, that people are going to pay their cell phone bill, they're going to pay their rent, and they're going to pay their car payment and gasoline before they pay their cell phone bill. And he was stating that he has seen greater numbers of delinquencies and more units going to auction, and that was corroborated by several of the auctioneers who said that their business, in fact, had upticked a little bit. But I don't think it's at all in this huge proportion that we should be so worried about. I think it's just a very small trend amongst a very big industry. And I don't think there's any reason to believe that the sky is falling, but I'd sure like to hear what Steve has to say about how the credit markets are reacting potentially to this downturn in business.
Yeah,
Steve, join us.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. I tried to call in earlier. Just I think someone took my spot, but now I'm.
I know. I'm sorry.
No problem. But you know, you talk about, you know, lenders trying to sell into the secondary market. Right now, there is no secondary market for self-storage financing because that was a commercial mortgage-backed security market that's right now dormant. There is not a market to buy those securities that were so attractive prior to this subprime mess that we're all part of. So what we've done is we've watched the residential mortgage industry trickle into the commercial mortgage industry, and the fear of failures on the commercial side are you know, pretty much stopping us from being able to do what we used to do. So you're absolutely right. We're seeing tighter underwriting requirements. We're seeing rates not as competitive as they were. We're seeing shorter amortizations. But there still is money for self-storage facilities. It's typically designed for existing facilities that are cash flowing fairly well right now. You know, historically we were taking larger facilities and putting them through conduit lenders, and we would, you know, who would then securitize those loans, get their money back, and loan it over and over again. We're just, that system is not in place right now. So the bulk of self-storage financing right now is going through portfolio commercial banks, local banks, community banks. It's just tight times right now. We still work with some life companies that are interested in self-storage if the numbers are strong and the market's there. market conditions, in that specific market, where that property is located, specifically to that market, is more crucial than ever. We got away with a lot in the last few years as far as where these properties were located. Some of the rural locations, some of the areas that were outside heavily populated areas were attractive properties to loan on. Nowadays, we have fairly tight criteria of where these properties are located, the frontage that they've got, the occupancy levels. We used to consider a self-storage facility basically stabilized at 65%. Now we're looking at for facilities that are closer to 85% occupied in order to loan on them. So we're seeing
at Star Capital, have you seen a trend toward a greater requirement for full recourse on loans, since
yes.
Most of these are portfolio loans?
Yes, because other than a life company, which typically when we do a property that's going to be funded by one of these life insurance companies, they're typically looking at loans in excess of $5 million. So you're looking at larger facilities. You're not looking at properties for certainly a first-time investor or a smaller operator of a park. Those are fairly large properties, typically with good histories to them. But what we're seeing is because the conduit side of things is gone for now, we're hoping it will return, certainly hopefully by the beginning of next year, we'll see. But that was the non-recourse avenue, were conduit lenders that were funding these loans with their warehouse lines, pooling them, and then selling off the mortgage-backed securities. So what we've seen is the funding has gone now to the portfolio lender, who is really, really focused in on a personal guarantee from whoever's involved in that transaction. So, yes, we've gotten away from the non-recourse side of things, unless you've got a fairly large transaction and we can take it through a life company that still does a non-recourse loan.
And Steve, where are you seeing spreads today? Have they widened a little bit?
Yeah, well, the spreads, it's almost impossible to even peg these spreads nowadays because they are so wide off the treasuries. You know, really a portfolio lender isn't going to necessarily just say, okay, we're quoting a spread off the swap or off the treasury. This is our rate, and this is what we're comfortable with this property type. Whereas a life company is going to give you a spread, but we've seen spreads in the 200 to 300 basis point range, where we used to be pricing these things maybe 150 off of the 10-year treasury. So the spreads are still pretty broad. We're pricing, those large loans. We can still, because the 10-year is so low, we can still price those in the low to mid 6% range on a 30-year amortization on a 10-year fix of the life company. Whereas when you get into the portfolio loans that we're doing with commercial banks, they're pricing those loans. If they're going to do a 30-year amortization, they pretty much want to be in the sevens on an interest rate. You know, if they'll go to, we work with some banks that will go to a 20-year amortization and maybe bring that rate back down into the sixes. We're seeing a lot of 5-year fixed programs with these guys. They don't want to go out too far on some of these fixed rates and then be stuck with a rising rate environment, and the spreads don't narrow with it, and all of a sudden their cost of funds is exceeding what they're getting as a return. So, it's a very picky market right now. When you talk to bankers, when you talk to community bankers, local bankers, they're telling you how much money they have to lend. Well, we've got, we want to loan more money. We want to do more money. But what happens is they want to loan it very, very selectively. And so, yeah, they've got a lot of capital because they aren't, a lot of these community and local banks were funding a lot of new construction, housing new construction. That was their bread and butter. That's in most parts of the country, that has dried up. So they're sitting on, loan money that they would like to loan out. But if you walk into their door tomorrow as a first-time self-storage potential operator, they're going to be very difficult to work with, in my experience, and they're not going to just jump all over your deal and thinking that it's going to work. So it's a tough situation. It's just right this minute, it's just things are tougher than they've been in years and years. And we're hoping it certainly gets better. That conduit side of things, that those investors that will buy into those commercial mortgage-backed securities, we really need them back, and we need them back buying in huge volumes, because that's what really was a great source of funding for so many borrowers over the last several years.
Linnea, has that given an opportunity for your business, since the banks may be requiring more professional management companies to manage some of these risks? Has that created any opportunities for you at PDQ?
Well, yes, we have seen some additional business from first-time investors, and even investors who may have a portfolio of self-storage that they're already using, but they seem to get a better rate from their lenders when they're using a professional management company who is maintaining the operation on a day-to-day basis and providing their reporting back. It takes the pressure off of someone who's a novice to have to not only, determine the investment and go through the development process or the purchasing process, but not everybody who wants to own a self-storage facility wants to run a self-storage facility, make sure Mary gets there at 9 o'clock in the morning and the place is clean and the money's in the bank. And that's what a management company can help to do for someone who has an opportunity to invest in self-storage but doesn't want to make it their career, is they hire a company like ours, PDQ, and we manage it for them, and we have the availability to use some economies of scale on purchasing. We know a lot of the other folks in the industry, like the group that's on this call, who can assist us in many ways, and we really are able to bring an individual owner the strength of an entire industry.
And from a lending standpoint, that not only an interest rate variation, but a make or break on whether they get the loan or not. We're
sure.
Seeing more and more lenders require professional management for a lot of these guys, especially when they are remote from the location, because what we'll do is we'll see a fairly moderately sized transaction. We've got a guy living in California buying in, South Carolina, and they're just not happy with having just an on-site person that's been there for a while that they've hired to take over. They do want an off-site company to come in like PDQ and oversee the entire property for them.
Let's take a moment to identify some of these upcoming SSA events. The Legal Learning Seminars with Jeff Greenberger, that's July 22nd, Jacksonville, July 23rd, Hollywood Beach, July 24th, Tampa, and then they'll be in Nashville again, October 7th through the 10th at the Expo, co-sponsored with Illinois and Tennessee. And they also have Rosen Shingle Creek 2009 Expo, April 13th, 14th, and 15th. That's next year.
Yes, it is. And
now, why don't we take a round moment now and identify everybody? Who's with us? Give us your name and the company you represent. Give us the name of your company and your website.
All right, I'm Steve Merton, Star Capital Corp. My website is starcapitalcorporation.com.
Yes, it's on our website. If anyone wants to see it, you can go right to it. It's right on. There's a link on it on the website, right to it. And Linnea Appleby?
Yes, I'm Linnea Appleby. My company is PDQ Management Solutions, and we consult and manage self-storage facilities around the country. You can get information on our company online at www.pdqmanagementsolutions.com. And there's a lot of good information there. And one of the things about self-storage is it takes a team. It's not an individual sport. It takes a group of committed professionals to make a self-storage property work. You need to have an attorney. You need to have a broker. You need to have a management company. You need to have feasibility work done. You need training. You need all sorts of things to make that all get pulled together and make it successful.
And Jeff, where is your firm located?
Okay, I'm Jeff Greenberger, and I am an attorney with the law firm of Katz Greenberger & Norton in Cincinnati. The Katz Greenberger & Norton website is actually on the link for the call and the show tonight, but I have a more simple website for those interested in storage, which is selfstoragelegal.com, and I have a bunch of information out there, like most of you on your websites, including, I think, every article I've ever written for any trade publication in the last several years. So it's a great get you through the night or great Thominex.
Uh,
But, you know, if you have a tenant that dies and you don't know what to do in the middle of the night with it, there's an article on the website to help you through that kind of stuff. And as you alluded to, I travel around the country and I do various state trade shows and private programs for state associations, including the three I'm doing in Florida in about 2 weeks. If you want more information, you can go to the FSSA website and learn about the Legal Learning Live programs that we're doing in Tampa, Jacksonville, and Hollywood Beach. And then we all do work for a company called Inside Self Storage Magazine, and they put on two expos a year, and one of those is coming up in Nashville, which you already mentioned. And I know Linnea and RK will be speaking. And one of the things that I would love to add is just, you know, I get the call every day, I'm sure as RK and Linnea do. I see you know about self-storage. I'm sitting on the need to do a 1031 exchange. I'm sitting on inherited cash. I'm sitting on cash that I needed to take out of the stock market, you name it. And I want to buy or own a self-storage facility. You know, tell me in 5 minutes how I do it. And the answer is, you know, thanks for calling and call me back after you've thought about your investment a little bit more. But Linnea and RK are part of a team that actually hosts what's called a developer seminar twice a year in conjunction with the ISS, the Inside Self Storage Show, where you can actually, there's a fee for it, but you go and you get a schooling. In one day, you hear from the people who know steel prices and financing and management and feasibility and so forth. And I generally tell people, you know, come back and talk to me after you've had a reputable person in the industry do a feasibility study. If you've got a good feasibility study, then we can talk.
Absolutely. It seems like that's the first step towards any business, but especially the self-storage business. I see that Jim Chiswell has joined us.
Hi, Ruthie. Hi, everyone.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Jim.
Excellent show, Ruthie. Thank you for so much for giving me the opportunity to jump in.
It's my pleasure. That's why I was such a stickler asking everyone for the numbers, the phone numbers, just so that I could invite you and make sure that you were here. And everyone was so excited. I didn't realize the magnitude of the self-storage industry. I mean, the real estate combined is amazing. The amount of real estate worldwide is incredible. They're almost neck and neck with McDonald's when it comes to...
The self-storage business is bigger than Hollywood.
Wow.
And Ruthie, that's an interesting thing that you brought up, because actually the number of self-storage properties in the United States is greater than the number of McDonald's, Wendy's, and Burger King combined.
Do you see that? That's amazing.
And Jim, you've seen about half of those stores, haven't you?
The other thing, Ruth, that the research that's been done by our National Self-Storage Association has shown is
yes.
that although the majority of Americans, over 90-some percent, understand the concept of self-storage, that less than 50% have ever used it at all. So we're looking at a potential market that still dwarfs what we've already as combined as an industry built.
That is wonderful.
Which is why the comments that everyone has made throughout the course of the first half hour relative to the fact that this is still a wonderful entrepreneurial activity, it's still probably, to me, one of the best entrepreneurial activities, maybe other than loan sharking, that's out there.
RK, can you hear me?
I sure can.
I just wanted to let you know that we had a heck of a time trying to find the proper spelling of your name, and it is a Benstein, not V. And we finally got it, and we got a copy of your book. We're selling it right on the website.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm honored to have you have that book on the website.
In fact, you had some competitors there. We found about 9 publications, and it looked really great to have the 9 publishers with their self-storage books on the site. And I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, all this material. And then I decided, you know, I'm only going to have the one gentleman who's written the one book. Why should we include the other? Take them off. And that's why your book is there by itself.
Well, we thank you so much for that. I'm privileged to have an opportunity to be in a forum with some real powerhouses in self-storage that you have. I have 2 new books that will be out before the end of the year on self-storage as well. So before you know it, there'll be a couple more there.
Do you have a website? Give us the name of your website, because I found what I found, the one with the video. Is that correct? Is that was yours?
That's correct. That's our website, and it's
okay. It's on the website. We have it right on the. Yeah, it's
great,
here.
That's www.askrk.com, like askrk.com.
Yes, it's on our website. There's a direct link right to all of your websites. So we have Linnea Appleby,
yeah.
Steve Martin, Jim Chiswell, Jeff Greenberger. Is that correct?
We're all here.
Yeah, I'm here.
Superb. Is there anyone here that I've missed? Perfect.
Hopefully just a few listeners.
Well, the listeners I can't control. There were just too many, and I had to actually shut down the switchboard because they knocked me off twice. Which is a wonderful thing to say about the show, that serious people, as you can see from my interviews, I don't do a lot of family-type interviews. I'm interested in business and promoting business, and when I was in business myself, and someone would ask me, what do you need the most? What could help you the most? And I'd always say, if someone would just listen to what I'm doing and give me the time to talk without commercial interruption, I would love that. And I know that other business people will too. So when I had the opportunity to join Alan Levy's program, Blog Talk Radio, I said, I want to promote business, what I've always wanted to do for the last 20 years. And that's why there's no commercial interruption. There's only a break to identify yourselves and your websites and your phone numbers. That's another thing. I want you each to say your name and your phone number if you're accepting calls from the public for business.
Great. Jim, do you want to start off?
Well, I think the easiest way to reach me certainly is through our website, which is simply www.selfstorageconsulting.com. Like all of the panelists, Ruthie, we're all on the road a great deal, so you probably have a better chance of catching us in the airport than maybe you do in our office.
Okay. Okay, next question. These are wonderful questions put together for me by a wonderful expert in this industry. How does somebody learn about self-storage business before investing millions of dollars in a lot of time? That's the question. Who wants to take it?
I'll take that.
Go ahead.
There are several ways to learn about the self-storage business, and it really would behoove a person to really do their homework before they start throwing money into it. Reading the book by RK and the books he's got coming out is a fabulous way to start. The developer seminar that Jeff alluded to earlier is another good way. It's a one-day primer, and it's held a couple times a year in different parts of the country where people get together and spend several hundred dollars to learn if they should invest millions. And I know that this opportunity tonight is, you had said, it's a chance for shameless opportunity to showcase your business.
Shameless plugging. Name, phone number, website,
yes.
Company
but,
name. Absolutely.
Absolutely. But the reality of it is, when you start to get to know the people in this business, in this industry, we are all educational oriented. We want to make sure that people are getting into the business for the right reasons. We have a lot of people that we talk to, and we say, no, it's not right for you based on what you've told me about yourself. So it's not the kind of business where everybody's rah-rah, sis, boom-bah, everybody, jump in, get your feet wet, spend lots of money. We really are protective of this business to make sure that people who get in it know what they're doing and can put up a site that is not going to degrade the industry as a whole. So anybody who is interested in learning about self-storage, I would highly recommend that they get on one of our websites, any one of the callers tonight, send in some requests and start a dialogue and conversation about their own personal situation and if it's right for self-storage. And we're mostly educators. All of us participate in every opportunity to educate folks on different parts of self-storage, whether it be legal or training or feasibility or development or acquisitions, just as a way to really, help people grow. So I would say to the listeners that are out there, feel free to ask questions. Feel free to come to the trade shows that you see advertised in some of the trade publications. Look on the websites. You can Google self-storage and come up with just a slew of different opportunities for education. InsideSelfStorage.com is a fabulous website that provides a host of free information for folks. And just start asking questions. Start asking questions. Start going to events. Start talking with people. And just once you get kind of into it, you'll get to know people who know people who know people, and it's a very small and tight network. I mean, we're competitors yet friends. We are, you know, we work together and separately, and you know, we're always doing what is the best for whoever the investor is. And it's PDQ, and it's PDQManagementSolutions.com.
Jim, would you tell us something about the training?
Ruthie, that's the thing about it, and I just want to come back to the points that you talked about, the various trade shows. But the thing that, and I've been in this industry 24 years now, and the thing that's always impressed me, no matter what meetings you go to, whether it be the Florida Association meeting, an ISS, another state meeting, is the camaraderie that exists among the men and women in this industry, that competitors even, and I've seen this happen as all of us on this panel have, are willing to sit down and share with each other ideas that are working. And that kind of networking I have never seen really in other industries that I've been involved in. From an education standpoint, there are everything from the great educational programs that are put on at like the Florida State Association. We'll have a full complement, including Jeff, of course, and RK and Linnea speaking at their meeting, to online initiatives now for the training of managers. And Jeff, although he's too modest to admit it, was one in the forefront of doing webinars that have literally attracted thousands of people over the course of the last several years, giving of his time as he has to so many causes within this industry to help educate everyone. So there is a myriad of platforms. RK has where he puts out a motivational minute from his website that you can subscribe to. So as Linnea said, we've all have that giving back attitude in terms of educating the people, because I think we all share the philosophy that the rising tides can raise all boats.
Oh, and Jim, tell us a little bit about the new program, the Self Storage Training Institute.
The in cooperation with Inside Self Storage Magazine. A lot of us, they picked a bunch of the first 25 or so faculty members, and we're going to be providing an entire curriculum, and at the end of taking those online courses, which are broken up into easily digestible 30-minute kind of tracks. Jeff, for example, is doing four detailed sections of various aspects of the law relating to self-storage and things you need to be aware of. The person taking all the courses will learn a qualified storage manager designation, QSM, and will be recognized for their expertise and the learning that they've achieved across the industry. That initiative will start at the Insight Self Storage Expo in Nashville in October.
And, Jim, do you have some content up on that as well?
Yes. Again, that's you can get that through the Insight Self Storage Magazine website.
Give us the web address.
It's just simply www.insideselfstorage.com, and you would look for education or the Self Storage Training Institute. You can find that there. But I have to tell you, I think the convenience today and with all the cost of transportation, it will be very well received, but there's also nothing to replace the opportunity to sit over a cup of coffee or maybe something a little stronger, and share with friends and share with new people, you know, thoughts and questions that you have, especially those people who are listening who are considering the industry. There's no replacing that individual FaceTime you can get by being at a show, having a chance to, for example, go to RK's booth and sit and talk with him or buttonhole Jeff after one of his sessions. It's just a great opportunity that somebody really looking to get in this business for the first time really needs to attend, I think, one of the national shows or state show.
You know, Steve, you might be able to comment on something. Ruthie mentioned that there were a number of books out on self-storage right now, and I've had the opportunity to read
there
a number.
There are nine. I found nine.
You know, I've had an opportunity to read a number of them and kind of compare them in terms of notes to how to invest in self-storage. And one thing I would be interested to hear you comment on, Steve, is it appears that there are a number of those books out there that make this business just seem a lot easier to get into, and some of them are almost like a Dave Daldato Nothing Down seminar that, you know, you can get in the business for very little money. It doesn't take a lot of expertise. That the profits are just these huge windfalls, and I've always kind of operated under the philosophy that if it seems too good to be true, it might be too good to be true. And I read those books, and I go away from them saying, I don't know about the self-storage world that they're in, but that's not the world that I normally see. How do you view that from a financier's perspective, Steve?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, you know, what investors, you know, that contact me, they're looking. You know, I work with guys that buy just about anything income producing that makes sense. So they've, you know, apartments, you know, they've gotten hot and heavy in apartments. The cap rates start to go around down in apartments. So they go to either mobile home parks or self-storage. So they because they have all these books and all this information out there kind of throwing out self-storage as this, you know, extremely profitable business, which it can be if it's run properly and it makes sense. The issue is, you know, the prices of these self-storage facilities are not getting any cheaper because they are, you know, and more investors are becoming aware of them as a good opportunity. They're, you know, how what you pay for the property is where you make your money. I mean, and that's kind of the concept. From a financing standpoint, I have clients that will come to me looking at a self-storage facility with an extremely low capitalization rate, and we can't finance as much as we'd like to on it. Normally, we're financing 75% loan-to-value on self-storage facilities, and normally that works very well because a lot of times the facilities that are brought to us are priced at, you know, a 9, a 10 cap. Those are great returns. Those are great numbers to buy a self-storage facility. But when you try to buy one at a 6 cap and you try to borrow 75% loan-to-value, those numbers just don't start coming together. You know, lenders nowadays want real down payment into these deals. Typically, that 25% needs to be cash into the deal. We do structure some deals where we allow a seller to maybe carry 10%, but you'd still need the 15%. So the concept of no money down on any commercial type of property is only happening with kind of a seller who is either desperate or very flexible. It's not going on in the lending industry. You know, certainly things have gotten tighter, so that real cash into a transaction is as important as anything else. And so, you know, I get, you know, you talk about guys that will call you and you do these training seminars. It's very interesting because the clients will call me ahead of even going to those or looking at facilities, and they want to know about the financing. They want to know, what can I expect if I buy a property in this price range? How much will I need out of pocket? What are my terms going to look like? What do I need to be looking for to match up with the financing? And so that's why, you know, I love to talk to clients who haven't found anything yet, because then you can direct them and say, okay, if you're looking for financing that looks like this, you need to go out into a market that matches this, a facility that has these kinds of occupancy, kind of condition, kind of location. So, you know, it's not a simple, hey, I want to buy a self-storage facility. It's not like buying a house, or it's not like buying a car. You know, we are going to dig into your background. We're going to look at you and say, hey, is this person capable? Number one, do they have the nowadays with all the recourse, we're looking for, you know, good, strong credit scores. We're looking for that cash in. We have a lot of clients that are part of LLCs, and they have multiple members that are bringing cash into the deal. We're more than happy with that. They're teaming up with national management companies or local management to make it happen. But all that needs to come together to really put together a strong financing package for somebody who wants to buy one of these facilities. It's just not simple. But it's not daunting either, because we do all that. I mean, we do the evaluations. When you say, hey, I'm interested in this facility, this is what it's all about, hey, send me the numbers on it, send me the historical numbers, and I'll come back to you and say, this is what I believe we can loan on it at these rates and these terms, and does that work? Does it work for the client? Does it work? And a lot of times it's, you know, frankly, I'll tell people, hey, you're potentially paying way too much for this property. There's no reason, you know, to have to load all this cash into it to get this minimal amount of return. You want to find those properties with that upside. You know, we love deals to look at deals where, you know, either the rents have just been raised or they're about to raise rents or they haven't raised rents in 5 years, you know, and that are in strong markets that have good occupancies. All that upside, everybody wants an upside. But the faulty reasoning at times is they want to sell the property on a pro forma basis. They want to sell the property based on the upside and try and figure out how we're going to finance it based on how it should be performing 5 years from now. So from a financing standpoint, we want to look at it today. From an investor standpoint, you want to look at it and say, what's it doing today? This is how I'm going to get my financing. This is what I should pay for it. Down the road, what can I do to enhance the value of this property? Can I add to it? Can I raise rents? Can I improve my occupancy? So we look at things from a variety of angles. We see a lot of deals lately that are in a very early stage, within a year or two of construction, that have lower occupancies. And what we'll do is we'll come in with a bridge loan on something like that and do interest only and put some interest carry in to get that client into a situation where they can stabilize the property and then we can take them out on the back end. So there's still options out there for clients. But, you know, the property needs to make sense and the borrower needs to have the cash to put into the property, typically, you know, 25% equity.
Steve, that'd be great if you would underwrite a transaction for me. I'm going to call you tomorrow. I have a property that I represent over in near Fort Myers, Florida, and it's exactly that situation where one of your bridge loans might be the answer for someone to get into this property with a little bit less down payment and whatnot, you know, if you can finance some of those carrying charges. Hey, Jim, you have a pretty wide customer base from institutional self-storage owners down to individuals. And I was wondering, could you let me know what you think the importance of a site that meets institutional grade criteria as far as size? How is that important to what you see amongst the owners out there?
Well, okay, certainly the ability to have the right size facility. Because one of the benefits of self-storage is really a two-edged sword, is that virtually all of our costs are fixed. What it costs me to run a facility of 45,000 square feet in one market, I can run a facility of 75,000 square feet. Yes, I've got additional costs in terms of my debt service and that, and maybe a little bit more utilities and taxes, but on a day-to-day management. So the institutional-sized property becomes, to me and most of my clients, is anything over 50, depending on the rental rate, 55 to 60,000 square feet on up to about 100,000 square feet. And I think the other thing, and it's something that Steve touched on, which I was really glad to hear from a lender's perspective, is that, you know, again, the understanding that these are management intensive. And anybody listening, don't kid yourself. Just because you went down to your local self-storage facility and couldn't rent a 200-square-foot unit, you think, oh, well, gee, this business is easy. Somebody just sits in there and collects the money. Anything could be further from the truth, because unlike other real estate, all of our customers, for the most part, are month-to-month leases, so we're effectively 30 days from being empty. And now, fortunately for us as an industry, that hasn't happened, but that's all part, too, of being the large institutional size, because unlike if I was sitting with a W.T. Grants as the anchor tenant in my strip center and the entire corporation goes Chapter 7, I'm in a world of hurt. And for most of us, maybe our largest commercial customer has six or seven large units so that there is no one tenant that can hurt us if the economy, you know, goes in the tank for them or something changes where they have to leave. It's clean it up, dust it off, make sure it's spotless and ready to go, and rent it to the next person in line. And we've been very blessed as an industry. But that's really, I think, RK, to your point, is the fact that the facility has to be sufficiently large to justify the overhead. And since you've got the fixed overhead, I've had arguments, as I know you've had, with clients who said, yeah, but I can only build 35 or 40,000 square feet on that particular site. And you say to them, find a new site. Now, we also have a lot of individuals across the country, and I just came back from a trip to Maine where I went by literally probably 40 small facilities, all under 5 or 6,000 square feet, that's being run ancillary to another business or something like that. And that's totally different than the institutional type investment and facility sizes that, that RK and I and Lene are used to dealing with.
Well, I can't thank you enough. I want to identify everyone again. We have Steve Merton, president of Star Capital Corporation, commercial management mortgage broker. We have Lene Appleby, president of PDQ Management Solutions. Her website's right on our site. Jim Chiswell of Chiswell & Associates. Jeff Greenberger of Katz, Greenberger & Norton. And RK, and help us spell that, pronounce that last name again properly.
Klevenstein, but everybody just calls me RK.
RK Klevenstein, Coast to Coast Storage. And does anyone want to mention any particular project you're working on that you want to give yourself a plug? Is there any project, any last-minute program that you're working on?
Well, I'm so bashful that I'll respectfully reserve the last 5 minutes for myself. No, I'm just kidding, guys. I would point out that one of the things our company does is acquisition due diligence, and I'm sure Jim also has that product as well, where if someone is looking at getting into the self-storage industry, whether it be from the perspective of a feasibility study for a new development or acquiring an existing property and needs help with the books and records inspection and really taking that apart and understanding what the financial ramifications of that sale are, I think Jim and I are both qualified to help clients with that. And it's more important now than ever to do your homework, as Linnea said.
And as the lawyer, Ruthie, I would only add to that, if you're going to buy a feasibility study, make sure you're buying a feasibility or a takeover study from someone who doesn't have something else to sell you. Getting your feasibility study done by the guy who sells doors, as I was talking to Jim the other day, you end up with 25 5x5s you don't need because he sold you 25 more doors that you didn't need. Mm. So, you know, and I'm sure Steve
excellent
would agree.
Point. Excellent point.
There are gold standard feasibility studies, and there are others. And, again, go to a trade show, talk to the people on the panel, find out who is available to do what the lenders consider to be a gold standard feasibility type study, not just a feasibility study done by your local builder or your local door salesman or something like that. I find those to be generally valueless.
Or the real estate broker who's representing the landowner who's trying to convince you that you can build anything you want on it when, in fact, because you don't do your homework, you end up owning a park.
Right. Right.
Both Jim and RK do fabulous feasibility studies, and they are the gold standard. They are the kind of feasibility studies that you can take to a bank and get your money loaned on. And when I talk with people who are interested in having a feasibility study done, one of the things that I recommend to them is a question to ask whoever is doing your feasibility study is, how many do you say this isn't a good project? Because you don't really want to have someone who's going to gloss over some of the red flags and say, oh yeah, go move forward with this, and then find out several $1 million later that it wasn't the right opportunity. So you really want to find out how frequently, you know, out of 10 do they say this isn't a good project, you know, and are they willing to make that call for you to keep you out of trouble in the long term? And both Jim and RK, I've worked with them enough that I've seen their recommendations where they've told somebody no who's come to me and said, well, what do you think of this? And I said, I think they're right. So you really need to, again, do your homework and ask the questions and get familiar and get comfortable with people. And we're all very approachable, and we're all very open to telling as much of the truth as we can. Sometimes we can't share individual things about certain clients that we work with and things of that nature, but for the most part, we'll tell you anything you want to know.
Well, I want to thank you all, Steve Merton, Linnea Appleby, Jim Chiswell, Jeff Greenberger, and RK Klevenstein. We've come to a full hour. Thank you all for coming. You were wonderful, wonderful guests.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ruthie.
And you're down to 43 seconds. Can you imagine? And you think you couldn't talk for an hour. Who knew?
Oh, we know this group can talk for an hour.
Thank you so much. You're a wonderful group, and thank you for bringing so much to the public about the self-storage industry for those of you that want to invest and are thinking about it. Do your homework. Get that feasibility study done. Go to professionals. Talk to people who are in the know. Keep coming to the website. You will find their links there, their names and numbers and contact information so that you can reach this wonderful crew, because if you're going to invest millions into this type of business, you want to be ready. That's good night from the newsroom, Syndicated News. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
That was a wonderful program this evening. We had professionals from the self-storage industry. See you again on our next program.